Welcome to MGO Podcast 11.8. Hey, that could have gone worse.
You can do better than that.
Welcome to 11 Podcast 8. All right, so I take Ubers to get here because we have one car. My wife is busy every Sunday at this time, so I take an Uber every time. So I'm listening to someone else's music.
Which is always an adventure.
And this time, I got the Sirius XM pop rock station. And on my way here, I get these three songs. One, Semi-Charmed Life.
Ouch.
Two, the live song... What is it even called? It's a stupid live song where the lyrics make no sense. All over you.
Okay.
And it's like, live. You know what I'm doing.
Can we get more of that?
What? More of that? No. Live already did that. Go buy Throwing Copper, which is an album that I own. Shouldn't have told people that.
Yeah, that is. Save that, David.
I was in high school. They were like...
You don't have to keep it.
They seem deep.
You don't have to keep it.
Well...
Like, I had Everclear CDs in high school. I don't still play them.
But if I don't literally have the CD, nobody is going to believe me when I say that this CD had a song on it where the lead singer berates his girlfriend for not leaving the waitress any change.
Interesting.
And the chorus is, everyone deserves at least some fucking change. So I have to keep it.
I mean, obviously.
Because obviously that's not on a streaming service.
That was a convincing case.
That's not on a streaming service. Nobody's putting that on a streaming service.
No, you anyway. Certainly couldn't Google the lyrics.
We all got to sing about something.
And number three was a Hoobastank power ballad.
You are really into this.
And I got to tell you, I've never heard a Hoobastank song before, but I saw them. I saw pictures of them when they were a thing. And also, they're named Hoobastank. So, like, what am I expecting? Like, fun party music about smoking pot. And instead, there's like this, like, I changed my life, and this is the reason. And it's just, I can't take it seriously.
Because they're called Hoobastank.
Because they're called Hoobastank. And that's how I feel about this game. Because, yeah, Michigan.
Okay, we took a long time to get there. All right. Here we are.
But so, Michigan is down 21-0. Can't take it seriously. And the way that they're playing it, I can't take it seriously.
It's some offense Hoobastank.
Then they get within a touchdown, and then it's KJ Hamler open by 10 yards. And you're like, ugh. And then they get down. They have a chance to score a tying touchdown. And Shea Patterson finds a second receiver. And you're like, oh, that's new. That's unusual. And then Ronnie Bell drops the ball, which he hasn't done all year.
Yeah, he had a great game up to that point.
And you're just like, ugh.
The universe hates us.
Hoobastank.
Don't you just blame Jim Harbaugh?
No, I blame Hoobastank.
Yeah, no, that's much more sensible.
I don't know. I feel like I got a lot of Jim Harbaugh's fault takes.
In you?
No. Just that you hear.
So I've ceased doing the Twitter on game days.
It's not on Twitter.
I noticed.
It's literally going into halftime of a different game that I had on as I was preparing notes and such, and the play-by-play guys like, you gotta wonder how long Jim Harbaugh has left, and I'm just like, this bro probably didn't even watch a game.
Yeah,
I had to put out a public service announcement yesterday to ask people to stop sliding into my DMs to make specific complaints.
That's
about
so
the game.
Strange.
It's like, yo, I have mentions for that because I can ignore those. Yeah. But the DMs
who
are like,
DM someone because they're mad about a football game.
You know, people. They're out there. I'm surprised you haven't gotten these.
Well, I've...
Or did you close your DMs?
He just doesn't answer people. Come on, Ace.
That's really the best.
See?
I didn't answer these people. I then subtweeted them by being like, don't do this. There weren't people I know. There are people I know I DM with. There are people I know.
So what's the first thing we should do?
Anyway, this is a MGO podcast 11.8. We would like to thank our lovely sponsors. Our presenting sponsors are Bosor and Underground Printing, Homeshore Lending, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, FICO Box, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Perrin Brewing, and The Athletic are our other sponsors. And we are, of course, taped from the Residence Inn.
There it is. For the first time.
Recording live.
We are recording live. We have not deceased. And I'm Brian Cook.
I mean, we came close last night. At least I did.
Say your damn name.
I'm Ace Ambender.
I'm David Nestor.
Oh, my God. He used,
Whoa.
Personal pronoun. Is that a personal pronoun? I don't know.
Whatever. What is I was a history major.
It's a contraction.
I don't pay attention.
I know you use contractions. You're not the Borg.
We write for a living.
Shut up, Ace. All right, so there were various ways in which Michigan could have won that game.
One of them.
Catch the damn ball.
Yeah.
All right. Number two.
That wasn't actually where I was going with that, but then you filled it in. I was going to go with maybe get some calls.
Oh, we're going to do that.
You said we were going to do that first.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
We have this whole, we plan out the podcast beforehand. We write out these things. You had that at the top of the piece of paper.
All right, can we actually proceed with the podcast now?
I guess next week we need to get the whiteboard back out.
Yeah.
You guys are not helping my mood.
That's because you killed the mood music. Oh, wasted.
Yeah, that was my fault. Right. Sorry.
I was going to go with it.
It was distracting.
Yeah, but if it was like in the background right now, being all bleepy and bloopy, it'd be awesome. Anyway, so it must be said that the referees probably cost Michigan at least 10 points worth of field position in this game. First, the offensive pass interference on Hudson on the Freiermuth touchdown, pretty obvious.
Yeah, when it's like the first thing that the announcers point out when they see the replay, it's just like, oh, I think they missed one.
Well, and like Hudson's in excellent position. He gets his head around, and all of a sudden he gets a shove, and that's the separation that scores a touchdown, and you can't let that go. The Collins offensive pass interference, which is just like...
He just turned around.
They're hand fighting. They're mutual hand fighting. You can't just wipe away a huge completion because of mutual hand fighting that the receiver got through.
They also called defensive pass interference. And have you ever seen a play at any level of football where you get matching PI calls?
I mean, it's just a cop out because you're let's have a do over for no reason.
Well, and like you see the double foul in basketball, you see matching penalties in hockey. I've never seen.
Because I believe they met for a little while after that, after those flags were thrown, and I assumed they were going to just either pick one up or, make a decision.
After the first few flags, I'm like, there's no way this is not on Collins.
And then the fourth down where John Reed decides to become a backpack for Tariq Black, and
he's backpack sized, you know.
That's a first and 10 on the plus 30 for Michigan that doesn't exist because...
And they're moving the ball. This is the second drive.
So that's probably...
Yeah, that's going for the tie.
That's probably... you get those calls right, and Michigan is winning this game.
Well, they're at least not in a 21-0 hole, and are can then, when they make adjustments later on in the game, are now taking control of it instead of trying to struggle for life.
Way number two, catch the damn ball.
Yes.
Way number three, we're going to give this one to Ace.
Please do not guard KJ Hamler with the slot receiver. Or recruit KJ Hamler! Good God! I was kind of just in personal hell last night.
So my thing with that is, even if they get KJ Hamler, is there any guarantee they use him in that fashion?
I mean, not necessarily in that fashion, but like no matter what you do with KJ Hamler, he's going to do something really impressive.
They did run a zillion bubble screens in this game.
Yes.
For the first time this year.
Okay, but you could have slotted Hamler into that role and it would have gone okay, I'm guessing.
But what's the downgrade from him to DPJ in that role?
Well, but here's the thing. That wasn't the choice. The choice was Oliver Barton, who is now at Iowa.
That's fair.
Or KJ Hamler to fill that slot role. And let's just say I was on team KJ Hamler for a very long time.
But they didn't recruit him because he was too short, which is some pretty dumb.
And now they have a team full of tiny slot receivers waiting in the wings.
And they have
I'm not mad about this at all.
And they have a bunch of big receivers that they don't necessarily throw the ball downfield to.
Well, I mean, they did throw the ball quite a bit in this game.
Collins gets 9 targets.
Hooray. But it does stick out. I mean, in the preview, I said that Penn State is going to get at their playmakers more.
Yeah.
And Michigan takes one downfield shot in this game. It's complete.
Works.
It's called back on some nonsense, but it's complete, and that's it. And the thing is that the pass protection in this game was excellent.
It was pretty good.
Patterson had to exit the pocket a couple times. He bought time early on that third down. And then he exited some clean pockets.
Yeah, he exited a few good ones.
But, like, how many times did he really not have time to throw? It was a couple times, but that's it. So you have time.
Yeah, at the very least, he had room to step up. I thought the interior line especially did a great job because he almost always had space to move up in the pocket.
Yeah, how many times did he, like, did he scramble out and get some chunks of yards?
I mean, he never had to do, like, the Madden orbit for the most part. He usually was able to move up and out as opposed to going around.
Well, and that Windsor guy had a great game in the last week or two, and I mean, I didn't even notice him.
He had a couple plays on the ground, but yeah, he didn't do anything.
But he didn't push the pocket.
On 41 pass attempts.
Right.
Plus some more that turned into scrambles. So, pass protection is great, and you know, you see Penn State get 283 yards in this game, but you know, two of them are shots over the top to Hamler that are touchdowns, and Michigan doesn't do that.
Yeah, there's just no quick strike element in the offense really at this point, unless you get like a big catch and run or you break something in the run game, which Michigan is not exactly doing at a frequent rate.
But to the good, Michigan incorporated a ton of bubble screens that would have been even more effective than they actually were if Nico Collins hadn't run a route on one of them.
Yeah. There was also a pretty bad miss block by Tariq Black right after he had a really excellent one on the play before. That might have been able to spring, I think, DPJ for a pretty big gain.
Yeah, and that Collins one was especially kind of grating because that cornerback was the only guy in the area. So if he gets blocked, you know, Michigan gets a huge chunk, and instead it's like third and whatever, third and a million. But at least, you know, we're talking about, hey, that could have worked, that made sense, and you saw later in the game, like, the touchdown that Charbonnet had, his second one was belly. And Michigan runs bubble action, and the overhang.
Penn State's got to respect.
Yeah, overhang guys are like, all right. And even the
there was a slant on that as well. That looked like a bona fide like multi-option RPO play that was tough to cover.
Possible, yeah. And on that play, even the defensive end like widens out and like goes upfield. Like he's not shuffling. So if you have a defensive end who doesn't even touch the running back on a belly play, like when's the last time that happened?
Like, I can't remember the last time a Michigan running back wasn't just snowed under.
And Michigan hasn't really incorporated the quarterback keep as part of this game's offense. So that goes back to the bubble. So when you test the edges, which we thought they were going to do all year, you get benefits other than the fact that these bubbles were generally successful.
Yeah, because Patterson does have a couple runs in this game, but they're mostly like designed quarterback runs is when he ended up keeping it. And on stuff where it looked like a potential read, he was almost always giving.
Right. Well, there was...
Even when it looked like he maybe should not have.
There was one early in the game where, you know, the backside defensive end just tears after the running back. And you're just like, ugh. Like,
if there is a key, this is it.
Yeah. And, all right. I mean, Patterson does have probably his best game of the year. Even, I mean, he's 21 to 41. There's a couple of drops in there. He's still a little erratic.
Yeah, there's some low throws in there. He turfed a few.
Yeah, I mean, there's one out in front of Collins, and everybody's like, catch the ball. And I'm like, well, you know, that's way outside the frame of his body. And he's 6'4" with giant Gumby arms. Like,
so that'll be a one in the UFR?
Might be a two, but it's borderline.
Yeah.
And, you know, People's Own did have three drops. You know, there are two where he catches the ball and then he doesn't secure it and then it gets raked out, and then there's one on a bubble and there's the bell drop right at the end. But even though Patterson had some issues, he also was able to, like, that third down I'm of two minds about that early third down conversion.
he got it big,
and he bought time in the pocket. He slid to the left specifically to get the extra second he needed to like find someone, which is like great. And if he could had done that all year, this would feel like a much better and different offense. But also, you go to the replay, and one of the great traditions in college football is Kirk Herbstreit saying, oh my God, there's nobody open when guys are open by 5 yards. This happened in last year's Wisconsin game.
Yeah, it also happened earlier in the season with Joel Klatt.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But Herbstreit, last year's Wisconsin game, you know, Patterson escapes the pocket, and Ronnie Bell is, like, hand-wavingly open by 5 yards in the corner of the end zone. And he's like, nobody's open. And in this,
Former quarterbacks in the announcing booth, very like any time it's like a long developing sack, they just default to coverage sack. I think. Yeah. Like they just refuse to believe that a quarterback could have missed open receivers for that long.
So Patterson's staring down Black, and
meanwhile,
there's nobody between the hashes for Penn State. Nobody. Literally nobody is between the hashes.
But Ronnie Bell is there.
Ronnie Bell is there, and DPJ is there. And this is playing, and Herb Street's just like, nobody's open. It's like, well, that's why you're in the booth, buddy. Because you probably sincerely believe that. But so Patterson played better.
Yes.
I don't think he played at like the level that we were hoping to see this year. Like, this was more like last year Patterson, which is progress from...
Yeah,
awful.
We would have taken that for the beginning of this season,
yeah,
which is pretty good, I would say. He's like B-plus-ish.
He had a B or B-plus. I don't think he's going to get, like, above 70% as a downfield success rating. I mean, he had a lot of throws in this game.
Yeah.
He had probably 5 or 6 throws that were just inaccurate.
Yeah.
And, his pocket presence was better, but he did exit clean pockets a couple times. Had kind of a horrible interception.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I don't understand how we can't set up one screen. We used to be pretty good at this under Harbaugh, and now every single screen that we run...
used to be an amazing screen team.
Except the, wide receiver screens to the edge is a disaster. Like, not just like, they got tackled for 2 yards, but we got our screen intercepted.
I mean, that
by a defensive back. That's the other thing. Usually when screens are intercepted, it's like a defensive lineman dropped into it.
Yeah.
And instead, this was a cornerback jumping a screen.
Completely red, yeah.
Yeah.
Not great.
No. The tight ends were terrible on the ground. So there was an early arc keeper, and Micah Parsons flows out and stuffs it for 2 yards.
And Eubanks is just kind of wandering downfield?
Nope.
So, or I'm thinking of a different play.
So does Schoonmaker. They both go by him on that one.
So Schoonmaker actually sets up and has him sealed inside, and then he's like, oh, let's go downfield. It's like, ah!
You see it on the tape, and it's just like, where are you going?
What are you doing?
What are you doing? Because it's Micah Parsons, right? Like,
it's the one guy you really need to just make sure to like not let free. Don't turn that guy loose.
And if that block is made, I think Patterson turns the corner there, and that's a first down.
And I think he had room in front of him, too, if you see the end zone cam.
And, time and time again, you'd get to the replay of the video, and Eubanks got crushed in this game. Like, he's up against guys who are weak side ends, basically. And I thought, all right, well, this is an opportunity for Michigan to do some work. And, there was one pin and pull, like the Charbonnet touchdown he did a good job on, but most of the time he was losing that battle.
Is this preferable, or would you prefer to have had McCune in this situation?
Yes.
Okay.
No question.
So if they have McCune, this might be different?
Maybe. I mean, if they have McCune, it's probably McCune not leaving Micah Parsons. It's probably McCune instead of All after All's reception, where they get stuffed in the backfield because, well, actually, Charbonnet had managed to dodge that. But,
didn't make it easier to gain yards.
He's running split.
Yeah, but if you block one of them and he makes the other one miss, all of a sudden he's free.
So that was a major issue. Getting McCune back, I think, is, well.
It would be nice.
It would be nice. And then, Ruiz gets downfield on the crazy DPJ drop number 3/Bell touchdown.
Yes.
And, he just kind of isn't there this year.
Did he hit anyone on that?
No.
Is that
he wanted
a penalty if you're not touching anyone? Because
can't wander.
You can't
wander. They'll hit you with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Just last week, I saw an Illinois lineman release downfield, get to 2.5 yards, and then freeze. Like, okay, can't go any farther. And it's really...
It's frustrating when your own guys don't do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially when, you're talking about a team that's supposed to be very terrible. It beat Wisconsin this weekend.
So this Ruiz thing, that's kind of similar to like the Patterson thing, right? Where you think you're going to get this jump, and all of a sudden now he's not even really what he was last year, maybe around the same, showing flashes.
Yeah.
But that's curious, isn't it? Because now this isn't one player. This isn't, Shea Patterson just didn't progress because X, Y, or Z. This is now his center.
Well, now you're into way number 4 that Michigan had won this game.
Here we go.
And that's not shoot themselves in the foot over and over again. So you got Sexton and goal from the 6. Michigan jumps offside twice in a row and then it's academic from there.
Yeah.
You're taking a timeout before the first play of the game. You know, you
that one was a little. That was, I don't know if I've ever seen that.
An auspicious start.
You just look overwhelmed by the moment, and you're disorganized, and you're not precise. And you know, I think that goes back to the head coach. Like, I don't think that's ever going to change.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
hard
this
to argue that
5 years into the program, this is what it is, and the kind of stuff that's wrong with it now, it's not wrong because one coach, you know, who can be replaced. It's wrong because the whole program.
This is the tone that's set.
Yeah, it doesn't have the precision that you need. Like, it doesn't have the just ability to execute consistently.
I mean, do you think that also plays into the fact of why you get drops and why you get things like that is just, like, lack of attention to detail?
Yeah, I mean, when you poke one hole in the levee and another one opens up, I mean, it
all kind of comes from the same one.
Yeah.
It's hard to dismiss when it's kind of team-wide.
Right, because you get a game from Patterson that, like, yeah, they could have won that game. And then everybody else is like, pass.
Well, that's the thing, is like, finally they didn't fumble, and then they dropped all the balls. And you're just kind of like, that's not the same, but it's kind of the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I am losing an understanding for how stuff like this can continue to happen.
But I thought you were going to say your mind, and I was going to be like, yeah. Me too.
I mean, at this point.
I mean, I think that's the next step. When you can't find any rational reason or as to why anything is happening the way that it is, then you do start to lose your mind, right? I mean, that's kind of the progression.
I feel like I'm at the acceptance stage.
I'm mostly there.
Like, just about the season.
Just like the program in general.
Just Michigan football.
Yeah.
It's there. I'd rather talk about Isaiah Todd.
We have something in common there.
That's a good transition to the defense.
All right, let's take a break and talk about the defense, which could have used Isaiah Todd.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Smile at what we go through. One stop to the rhythm that divides you. And I speak to you like the chorus to the verse. Drop another line like a coda with the curse. Coming like a freak show takes the stage. We give them the games to play. So say, I want something else to get me through this. Send me some kind of life.
I mean, he could have been really tall and knocked down some of those shots to Hamler. Can he run fast?
Josh Uche can run fast.
I think he would have been slower than KJ Hamler still.
Probably. But, you know, 6'10", he's got like a legit foot on him.
Yeah. So 283 yards for the second straight week, Michigan holds a team under 300 yards and gets like 20 points and change put up on their face.
He could have hit a Dirk fadeaway jumper on him.
Would that have helped?
It would have made me feel better.
So
it would. Have, I mean,
so no.
The outcome would have been the same, except I would have seen a Dirk fadeaway jumper from a guy who's going to play for Michigan.
Can we?
Maybe.
Castleton has that too.
Yeah. See. See. I'm starting to get you into this.
Dave's going to walk out of the room.
we're losing.
All right. Shut up, Ace.
So they get 283 yards.
283 yards.
159 of those are on four plays.
So the Dotson fade downfield.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The two touchdowns to Hamler and then the Ricky Slade run up the gut.
Right. And you take, and then other than that, Penn State has 50 plays and they average like 2.5 yards. And that includes the Freiermuth push-off.
That's a pretty strong defensive performance for the most part, except for the inexplicable decision to guard KJ Hamler with the
safeties.
With no help.
Rotating safeties. It wasn't even just the same safety. We'll try the other safety.
Well, after Hawkins doesn't stay within 5 yards of him, it's like, well, maybe someone else can.
And they pick Metellus because Mike McCray is now on the coaching staff?
Metellus is a really good cover safety, but he is still safe.
He is, but he's not a track star, and that's the point. And we're sitting there, and I was just like, why don't you just have LaVert Hill follow him around and then figure everything else out?
Yeah, man, I could live with Metellus on Justin Shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you could break up a jump ball. Also, did Shorter get a target? I don't think so.
No.
I do not remember.
I mean, that might have also been because of LaVert Hill, but still.
He did draw a holding call when Hill tackled
him. In the worst possible time ever when Michigan is finally about to like get over the dam, and then that happens, and then the next play is the Hamler 51-yard touchdown. You're just like, this is never going to happen. This is just never going to happen.
Yeah, do you want to know how many receivers Penn State targeted in this game?
Targeted? Go.
Three.
Two.
Oh, you're not counting Freiermuth.
No.
Yeah, I'm not counting Freiermuth. Sorry. Wide receivers, which would be relevant for like Metellus and playing around with Hamler.
Well, I mean, but the other thing is like you're playing a zone, right? So if you're playing a zone and Hamler comes into your zone, you got to cover him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the second touchdown, Metellus is coming over and he's at 12 yards deep and he still gets beat like that. And it's like.
And it looked like about three steps into Hamler's route, Metellus knew what was happening and was like, I am not going to be able to deal with this.
Yeah, I mean, he got on his horse, but his horse was not fast enough.
Got on his pony.
If you've got get that much cushion, you can't get beat over the top like that. I mean, you at least got to be in the ballpark.
Yeah, ideally you don't. I still think it was not a great position to put him
in. No. But, you know, you're if you do move Hill down over the slot, all right, now what happens on the drag routes? because now you're in man coverage, right? And you're telling them you're in man coverage.
Yeah, no, that's the part that makes it difficult is you're very much picking your poison, and Michigan because of some shortcomings in the secondary, Michigan shut it down.
Penn State's first drive, the third and sixth, it's drag route to Hamler.
Michigan switches it beautifully.
Yeah,
and Hawkins comes down and stops it.
Hill steps to it and then backs off of it. Hawkins comes and cleans it up.
And then Penn State decides that they would rather go slot fade.
Yeah.
Which was a smart decision on their part.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's like, you know, Michigan's probably like one or two guys short in the secondary of where they'd want to be able to run a variety of coverages without having like a gaping hole in their coverage.
283 yards, and they get up 28 points. Like,
because they're all in big plays. But that's what we've watched Penn State all year, and they're not efficient. They cannot move the chains. They don't keep drives alive. They hit you with a big play, and they score, or they don't. And yesterday they did.
Yeah, Seth's assertion that Clifford had Shea Patterson disease was pretty much on point.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving clean pockets. Like, that was the disappointing thing from Michigan's perspective, is that their pressure, I mean, they didn't get home very much at all.
No, I mean, two sacks in this game, and it felt like...
And they were really late.
And you had a couple of instances where you were able to scheme up McGrown on a free run, mm-hmm. but, like, you know, Hutchinson didn't really do much in terms of pass rush. Pay didn't really do much in terms of pass rush.
He tipped a pass to Brad Hawkins, who added to the drops.
That's
not a drop. He got both his hands on. It's in front of him. He's a wide receiver in high school.
Hutchinson had both his hands on Clifford on one play, and Clifford managed to kind of like chuck one underhand to get it out. So he was very close to a sack, at least.
Yeah. Well, and it was a 3rd and 20 that they stopped anyway. So
yes.
I mean, it's just the thing where, like, okay, you're dominating this game. You're dominating the line of scrimmage, and then you have the one screw up, which I think is definitely on the defensive tackles for getting split.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, one of your linebackers has to be getting to that gap.
You thought it was Hudson?
Yeah, I thought it was Hudson. I haven't given it the full...
It was either him or McGrown. Glasgow was on the edge, so it was one of those two that got in the wrong gap.
Right, and usually it's the weak side guy who's going to be free and has to clean that up. And also, you know, I usually kind of think that if someone's in an uncomfortable position, they're probably the one who's screwing up, and Hudson really isn't a weak side linebacker. He's not an inside linebacker. He hasn't played that except in certain situations where the other team schemes him into that spot, and it has not gone well for Michigan.
Consistently.
So that's not his game.
So is this kind of rain beating Brown in a lot of ways? I mean, it's
283 yards.
No, I know, but he got the matchups he wanted and hit his big plays.
This was KJ Hamler beating Brown.
I mean, I don't even know, man. Like, I don't know.
This just seems like the other thing where if you're like, Penn State's going to get 283 yards, you sign up for it, and then you realize that they're all those yards are big touchdown plays, and you're kind of like, well...
I mean,
if that OPI gets called correctly, they're probably kicking a field goal, you know, after that, and it's
because they go back 15 yards.
I mean, you probably sign up for Penn State scores 28 points in this game, and you hope you just get. I mean, maybe not 20. You'd probably prefer something a little bit lower,
20.
but like 28 against a team that good, or at least with that kind of big play potential, isn't awful.
Also,
and,
if you know,
and then you just need something out of your offense and. Michigan for the first half didn't do that.
I mean, kind of, but they also like did, and then it got called back, and then got interfered with, and it got.
Yeah,
I mean, there were those issues, but you know, y'all.
I mean,
Michigan consistently has not been able to overcome
those issues,
those problems, and other teams find ways to do that.
I mean,
road game at night.
They're still great. Don't get me wrong. It's just like,
no. It's just like I just think like road game at night against a top 10 team that is undefeated, playing decently well, and then you. I mean, how many teams in the country are going to overcome those issues? Like Ohio State and Alabama,
and is Michigan
in not in that group? No, but they're also like in a position where they can win this game if things are 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, you remember that Iowa game when Michigan was like number 3? They go into Kinnick. We went to it.
Yeah.
And
I've tried to forget, but
we bring it up every week on the podcast.
And Amara Darbo has like this true freshman on him who cannot check him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wide open downfield like 6 times, and Wilton Spate misses him every time.
And then the one time he hits him, it hits him in the lap and he drops it for a first down that would have ended the game. I mean, that's just kind of the way this goes.
Well, but what I'm saying is that like you change that fade to Dotson and you push out another yard. Like,
yeah, I mean... Like things can change significantly.
They hit all their shot. They had one shot that missed, where Clifford was rolling out of the pocket and tried to find. I think it was Dotson deep against Thomas, and that missed. They hit three out of the four of those.
Then they had the one to Hamler that Josh Uche spectacularly broke up.
Well, more like Hamler's face mask broke that one up.
6-1.
Uche was in the area.
6-1, half a dozen the other. We'll go with.
There was a safety there, too.
It was. Yeah. Anyway, your point is?
My point is that, you know, they hit their shots, and if they don't, and there's a pretty strong chance that at least one of those misses if you replay all those shots over and over again.
Yeah.
Then it feels like a totally different game.
It is a totally different game.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But so, that's just what happens. Like, this is what happens.
It's a cold comfort, but, you know.
I feel like we have this conversation, and it's I don't know. Like, last night I'm just sitting there and being like, what's the point of this? Like, you...
Hey. There are things about this game that were encouraging.
No. It's not about B-Pone. It's about just, like, if you cannot ever overcome something, and then the times that you try to, you get restrained by other forces. It's just like...
You don't think that's B-Pone?
No, because if I... If I actually accepted that, I probably wouldn't do this job anymore.
Well,
because I probably wouldn't watch Michigan football very much, and I probably wouldn't
care. Walk out of the building.
When you didn't want to talk about the game that I stayed up till 2 a.m. prepping for. Yeah, that's a different thing.
Well, do you have anything else to say about the game that you spent all this time prepping for?
No, I mean, we're talking about these things. We talked about the defense, and that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know what to do with explosive plays when you have no efficiency. Is that good defense, or is it not because you gave up all those explosive plays? And so then do you fix it? Can you fix it? And I don't, like, that's the thing that I'm struggling to kind of get a grasp on.
Well, in the last two games, Michigan has probably given up close to the maximum number of points per scoring opportunity you can.
I mean, I think this is...
Is that a fluke or is that not?
I mean, I think this is kind of Michigan's defense. It's going to be very good most of the time, and there are opportunities to hit big plays on it because they're a little bit short in the secondary.
I mean, if they're short...
I think they're like one starting secondary player short of really being able to do what they want to do.
And is that like Dax Hill in 2 years, not this year?
It might be Dax Hill next year.
I mean, they could have put Dax out there and he could...
They did, and Hamler beat him a couple times.
I mean, yeah, but beat him and then Dax Hill immediately tackled.
Yeah.
Instead of...
That's like a different thing than this guy's not within 5 yards of Hamler.
That is true, because then you're forcing them into field goal type situations instead of walking into the zone.
Well, consider the one where that got broken up with Hamler. Like, there's a safety over the top. Uche's running beneath him. And there's a window there, but...
It's a tight one.
It's not that tight, but there's a window there. And there's not a window on his touchdowns. There's, like, a veranda.
There's an acre?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
It's just get it over the top.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the other section, segment, whatever, you know.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch, and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, that's what your next ad should be. So, here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization. Add $500 a month for each kid's 529. Invest with the appropriate risk tolerance. Make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Say, do you like clickbait? Do you like articles that take about 5 minutes and zero knowledge to write? Well, you listen to this podcast and you probably read MGO Blog, which means you don't. And it's probably time to get that Athletic subscription. I'm going to get you 40% off. Just listen in. The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site delivering in-depth sports coverage for diehard fans. You read exclusive stories on Michigan football by Nick Baumgartner and Austin Meek, Michigan basketball by Brendan Quinn, national stories from writers you know like Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel, and Seth Davis. There's no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news coverage. You can join today for Wolverines content you won't find anywhere else and get 40% off your annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/mgoblog. Again,
That's athletic.com/mgoblog.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Take your broken heart, turn it into art. Can't take it with you, can't take it with you.
It's that time. Who will ascend from Gehenna on pillars of fire and deliver the hottest take available unto our podcast listeners?
This is so much more energy than was brought for the rest of the podcast. It's kind of amazing.
It's not true. We have been relatively high energy for a podcast after a loss. It's not that Alabama game.
That's true. That's true. We're not talking about Pitbull in Alaska.
So will you rise?
Yes.
On pillars of flame?
Yes. So... wait, allow me to get my voice ready.
Okay.
Michigan should have offered KJ Hamler 2 scholarships. 2. Bare minimum.
That's not a hot take. That is not a hot take.
5. 5 scholarships.
I can hear your goatee getting moister.
I did have a little spittle
can
on that one.
Can you see it? Is he just drooling at this point?
I asked him to... come from Gehenna on pillars of flame to climb Mount Tecula.
And yeah, it's not even a hot take, but...
no.
I mean, maybe the 5 scholarships would be.
Yeah,
you know, like, depending on which sports you took them from.
But, like, if you're telling me that I had to trade, like, Oliver Martin's scholarship and Mike St. Ristol's for KJ Hamler, I'd be like, okay.
It's picking, like, the 3 more that maybe brings it into hot take territory.
Yeah. I think we could
so
probably...
5.
I think
5 scholarships.
We could probably find something.
Dave! Give it to me, all the takes.
It's Minnesota's division.
Yo.
Wow.
Is that, that's not a hot take anymore. That's what I predicted at the beginning of the season. Was that a hot take? I guess it was.
It was a little hot.
Well, now it's not.
Although their schedule did kind of set up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
But they also...
whatever, undefeated Minnesota was not something we saw.
It's one loss in Minnesota's division. After just thinking they should be 0-3, I know we talk about
that's
this every
true.
Week, but they really should have lost 2, if not all 3 of those games. And now
here they are.
They're steamrolling people, and I look at the matchup with them hosting Penn State in probably a dilly bar snow fest, and I think,
who knows?
Why can't they win this game?
They can definitely win that game. All right, my hot take is that when Isaiah Todd gets on campus, Michigan should play him at point guard. Because just think about it.
And sit X?
Well, he's X.
They're not going to overlap.
So Isaiah Todd, 6'10",
okay.
Point guard. Your 2 guard, 6'9".
Franz Wagner.
6', we'll say 8. Isaiah Livers is your 3.
Mm-hmm.
6'8", Johns is your 4.
You can even stretch that to 6'9".
Sure. And then you got 7-footer, Colin Castleton. That is the biggest team in the history of college basketball.
Should they play like a 2-3 on the defensive end?
Sure, yeah.
It's basically what the Philadelphia 76ers are doing this year.
It's basically what
are they?
I know you don't follow the NBA, but no. the six So the Sixers have had this problem where, like, you know, they have Ben Simmons, who is a point guard who can't shoot and is 6'10".
What? You Ben Simmons is a point guard?
Yes, Ben Simmons is a point guard. You really don't follow the NBA.
Even I know that.
Ben Simmons is a superlative passer.
The guy who was at LSU for a year and didn't make the tournament?
Absolutely cannot shoot a lick. Unbelievably talented. Can do everything except shoot the ball, really. Mm-hmm. So they've been trying to figure out ways of putting teams around him. And this year they decided to sign Al Horford in the offseason. They already have Joel Embiid, who is 7'2"-ish.
Yeah.
And they're going to start Al Horford, who has played center next to him. He's like 6'10". They have a 6'10 point guard.
Yeah.
They're just going, and I think their rest of the lineup fills out somewhere like 6'7 and 6'8.
Yeah.
So that they're doing this.
So what
there's going to be a blueprint.
All right.
So what you're saying is Brian is trusting the process.
He's trusting. Yeah, okay, this is a different process than the original Sixers process, but yes, he is trusting a process here.
It'd be interesting. They're not going to do it. They shouldn't do it, but it'd be interesting.
It would be.
It would definitely be interesting.
I would like to see Isaiah Todd run some pick and rolls as the ball handler.
All right. Well, then he can play point. I mean, they're going to be absolutely huge, even if they have like a regular point guard, because then Todd slots in at the four.
Yeah.
And everybody else bumps down.
And your wings go 6'7", 6'8", 6'10", and you have Castleton out there. And then if it's Zeb, then your point guard is going to be pretty big too.
Yeah.
If it's DDJ, not so much. And you got Bajima coming off the bench. John's coming off the bench. They're going to be enormous.
They've got a lot of length.
With DDJ, it'll be like the old Kansas teams where it was like Jacques and the Beanstalks.
There we go.
Yeah.
Once you've summited Mount Take.
Mount Take!
Summiting Mount Take on the fires of Gehenna. Well, then you should go get Fuego Box. Visit FuegoBox.com/MGOBlog10 to get $10 off your subscription, and they will send you 3 hot sauces every week that will be the taste equivalent of this amazing segment. All right, this is where we talk special teams and game theory type stuff, and...
Well, there's a crossover with the special teams and game theory.
Oh, my God.
That happened at the end of the first half.
What? Why was that the option?
What?
Attempting a 58-yard field goal with Jake Moody.
When you're down by 14 points.
I mean, it was...
And it's like fourth and makeable.
Wait a minute. Were you going to say it was close?
It was close.
Dude, that bounced in the end zone.
Yeah, but that's close. It was...
Okay, but here's the other thing is, look, I get that Nordin hasn't made field goals. I understand.
But Nordin apparently was hurt.
Oh was he?
Nordin was apparently unavailable.
Well, okay, so if that's true, then this is a no contest.
It's true. There were 3 horrible fourth down decisions in this game. They have 4th and 1 on their opening drive?
In plus territory.
Yeah. Which felt like, oh God, that's such a horrible tone, along with the timeout to start the game.
Some Lloyd Carr-esque
we didn't even get to that.
Decision making.
Yeah.
Like, it's 4th and 1. You're in plus territory.
You have Ben Mason.
You're on the road in a game where you know you're going to need to get some points on the board.
Your punter is terrible at pinning guys deep.
Yeah. There's also that.
And, you know, you see that, like, they get one first down and they go out, and Michigan started in the next drive from their 15-yard line. So, I mean, that inexcusable. I mean, it's 2019. You can't make that decision.
No one else in college football. I watched the Oregon-Washington game, and they're down by 14 in their own half, 4th and 1. They go for it on their own 35 on 4th and 1, and they get it. And I was like, I couldn't believe someone made that decision.
Well, what did Wisconsin do in the first drive of our game?
Oh, yeah. On their own, like, 30. Well, yeah.
And then they punt on 4th and 3 with 6 minutes left in the third quarter. And they're down 1 or 2 touchdowns at that point. And that's also like the Michigan 48. Another completely inexcusable decision to go with the 58-yard field goal. And
the 58-yard field goal, though, is like if you have Nordin, okay, I kind of get it because he can kick it 75. But if he's out, like Moody can make – I mean, a 50 or 50-yard field goal is long in college.
I was surprised 60. Penn State didn't put Hamler back there. And if they had, he would have had a chance to return that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there's James Franklin helping us out.
Yeah, thank goodness.
They might have been like, this is so stupid. It's got to be a fake, right?
So. I mean, quite fine, but I feel like – But you can still defend a fake kick with 10 guys because most of the guys on the field are not threats.
It's true. So I mean these are just, you know, we talked about how it kind of feels like the program is kind of stuck in a spot because of the head coach, and these are directly related. I mean, 4th and 1 in plus territory. I don't care what the score is, what the time is. Let's go for it.
And that's like a tone setting thing for your team too, where just like we don't trust you to gain a yard. That's what it's telling your offense.
Especially with Michigan's interior offensive line though. I mean, those were the guys that have been consistently power moving people.
Yeah, like if I'm Mike Onwenu and I'm getting called off the field in that instance, I'm like, yo, what the heck's going on?
Yeah, what the heck.
I was trying to clean it up for the podcast.
This is why we love it.
I'm pretty good.
We haven't dropped an F-bomb yet, miraculously. Well, so
I think Brian did earlier.
No, I don't think so. Not during.
Yes, because I was talking
about change.
I was talking about live
and change.
They have that song about.
Oh right, you did.
Getting
my bad.
The waitress.
Okay. In that case, what the fuck is going on?
Here we go.
Is there like a? Do we get an explicit tag at some point?
I don't think they actually listen to these. I think you basically just volunteer yourself.
Yeah.
For the explicit tag,
we're still PG-13. We have two F bombs.
We keep it within the FCC limits.
Dave would like to say something.
No, I'm just kind of thinking about all this.
But I mean, 4th and 3 at the Michigan 48, and you're down, and they've actually
been moving the ball at that point too.
And there's 6 minutes left in the third quarter, and like this is the stuff that we made fun of Paul Chris for last year.
This is the stuff that we've made fun of so many coaches for doing for so long.
And this is the stuff that it seems like the rest of college football has collectively almost fixed.
Yeah.
If you watch random college football games, this stuff starts to happen.
Uh-huh.
Even at a high level, where teams tend to get a little more protective and like, well, you know, I'm good enough.
The frequency with which I feel jealous while watching other college football games is really alarming. Especially when, like, given some of the teams that are involved, but I feel jealous.
That's true.
So what was our Frames Janklin?
Oh,
we did have a Frames moment.
Like they've got a fourth down and the clock's running and they call timeout. There's 21 seconds left. He did this before against Brady Hoke.
He gave Brady Hoke a free Hail Mary.
He was the one that almost...
Which still means he should have learned.
He was the one that burned his timeout before the safety and then the onside kick.
That also happened.
So they...
Brian's face right now is phenomenal.
There's 21 seconds left and you know you're going to punt. And you call timeout. Like, what? What? And
just
and,
like, here are some seconds to do something.
And this complete tool bag had way better decisions than.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have to change the Frames Janklin factor in FIFO film back to Zook factor just to undo some horrible juju.
No, because he called timeout. With 21 seconds on the clock running so that he would have to punt to Donovan Peoples.
That's true. It's just like having a contemporary that outcoached Jim Harbaugh is alarming.
He didn't outcoach Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh
outcoached himself.
Yeah. I still can't get over those decisions.
And that's,
they're bad.
And that was the other thing. That's just like announcers, and I don't know, I usually don't complain about this, but here we are. And like on the bell drop, they're like, Penn State with a big stop. And I'm like, what part of this was the stop?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing of where you're just like, get out of your own way and you're all right.
Yeah. You want to talk some basketball now?
Yeah.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Why do you do what you do? I grew up in the small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed great people I care about making a lot of poor financial decisions. I thought to myself, I never want to be in that position, putting my retirement at risk. Now we want to make sure that your retirement is not at risk. And by providing education and guidance, we inspire our clients to make great decisions, putting them on a path to be able to retire with confidence. I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP, President, and Founder at
Peak Wealth Management.
And that's my why.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Arte Perfume for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Element show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
On the cloud of unknowing, my world seems open. Every satellite up here is watching. But I was here from the very start, trying to find a way to your heart.
We welcome in Jamie Mack at DiscoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing all right, guys. I kind of regret that I left my Beepone comfy chair for a little bit yesterday in the second half, but I'm sitting right in it now, ready for the podcast.
Well, possibly you could explain this unexplainable thing. Illinois, 24. Wisconsin, 23. Brandon Peters' mom dropping bombs on Twitter. What is going on?
How about that? All the feels for Brandon Peters. Easily one of the most unlikeliest outcomes I can recall ever while I've been watching the Big Ten. I mean, there is just a litany of crazy stats that we can throw out. The first one I'm going to say is Wisconsin had 41 runs yesterday, and 15 of them were stuffed for 1 yard or less. It was just crazy to watch Illinois hold serve on the line of scrimmage against Wisconsin, especially a week after watching Michigan just completely gash them. And they really couldn't even protect Cone. They allowed 5 sacks yesterday after only allowing 5 sacks all year.
I don't know how to feel about this.
All of these stats are making us just despondent over here.
Or
just confused.
We beat Illinois.
Why try to predict anything?
Yeah.
Do you know how long that has been my stance?
That's why I said it.
15-19. That's what the score is going to be. Anyway, Jamie, what?
Yeah.
I mean, because
Illinois,
this game ended so
Illinois had zero trips into the red zone yesterday.
What?
They had zero trips into the red zone yesterday.
Peters is 9 of 21 for 174.
That sounds familiar.
That's like that's like Francois against Michigan in the Orange Bowl, right? Where he completes like a third of his passes, but they all go for like 80 yards.
Yeah, they had the longest rush of the day, Illinois did, and they also had the longest pass of the day, and they both went for touchdowns. Wisconsin had allowed just one 40-yard play all season, and Reggie Corbin had a 43-yard touchdown run, and Johnny Navarro took a really easy slant pattern, and I think it was Eric Burrell from Wisconsin who just whiffed on a tackle, and he took it 48 yards to the house. And that touchdown made it 10-7 in the second quarter, and Corbin's touchdown made it 20-14 late in the third quarter. They just hit on some big plays. I mean, they got past midfield, obviously, on those drives, and then they finished it off with big plays that we hadn't seen Wisconsin give up all year.
Yeah, I just don't understand how, after what we saw last week, that Jonathan Taylor didn't have 300 yards on 3 carries.
Like, right, totally. Well, and then especially after the first drive, he ripped off like a 20-yard rush on the first play of the game, something like that, and they just went right down the field in typical Wisconsin fashion and scored a touchdown on their first drive. And, yeah, it totally looked like you just said, he's going to rack up, you know, well over 200 yards. He's going to have some Heisman stats, and then they're gonna roll. And then it just, you know, everything just stopped for him.
Cone doesn't even play poorly.
Well, that pick to set up the game-winning field goal was that was not great.
No, that was one bad pass. But he's also averaging over 8 yards an attempt.
Good point, Ace.
Thank you.
All right. Minnesota 42, Rutgers 7. Rutgers gets a vastly improved performance from their quarterback. 48 yards, 2.5 yards an attempt, 0 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Things are really happening for Johnny Langan. Is that the first name? I don't
Langan,
care.
Langan, sounds like it. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Johnny.
This game was a total disappointment. As we were approaching the end of the third quarter, a full Rucker was still on the table.
Yeah.
And then garbage yards in the fourth quarter just completely wrecked it.
Yeah, they didn't even get either phase as a record, did they?
My all-time hot take is getting hotter.
Indeed. Rashad Bateman had a really awesome catch in this game, and
he is good.
Both Minnesota receivers are just like dudes.
Oh, by the way, we have a new Gopher quest.
Oh, that's right.
Because Bill Connolly tweeted out the probabilities for teams going undefeated or 11-1 this season.
It doesn't seem to apply to Rutgers.
No, it does not. Sorry. This is an actual a quest for the Gophers that is not. That is a total opposite of the previous Gopher quest.
Okay.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, we tracked a Minnesota team that was really bad.
Before we really knew what really bad was.
To see if they were the worst team in the history of the Big Ten. And Rutgers might actually be it, but so this is the other side.
This is the flip side.
Undefeated Minnesota.
Undefeated Minnesota has a 7% chance of going 12-0, according to Bill Connolly and the SP Plus.
That would be an amazing.
And a full blown 1-3 chance of going 11-1 or 12-0.
Crazy.
So
that's crazy.
Here's
well, and
also Iowa controls their own destiny in the Big Ten West.
Correct. I mean, that loss by the Badgers just changes a lot of math. You just said that Iowa controls their own fate, which is crazy. They're terrible.
It's disgusting.
And Minnesota, we mentioned last week that, they just needed to go 2-1 in that first hard stretch in November, split games with Penn State and Iowa maybe, and then they can, play Wisconsin for the division title. But they could drop both those games now and still probably play for the West title, because Wisconsin's probably going to lose next week to Ohio State, and I don't expect Iowa to not lose again.
That seems unlikely.
Yeah. So Minnesota comes out as the big winner yesterday on that side of the conference for sure. And all they had to do was play Rucker.
Yeah.
And now they got Maryland next week at home. Then they have a bye, and then they start that kind of November gauntlet that everybody's waiting for them to see. That starts with a home game against Penn State. I kind of feel like they got a better shot in that game now than I did maybe a week ago. But
I mean, if they win that game, that's it. Because they have Northwestern after that.
I think Minnesota
win correct.
That game.
Yeah, they could. They literally have on their plate a chance to wrap it up before they even get into the Paul Bunyan axe game.
Iowa 26, Purdue 20. Both teams got over 300 yards of offense.
Hooray!
Iowa kicked 8 2/3 field goals to get to their 26 points.
Yeah.
Jake Plummer threw 50 times, 6.5 yards an attempt. That was this game.
Purdue rushed 18 times with a long of 9.
Are they still missing half? They're still missing half their skill players.
Yeah. Purdue is about as injury riddled as I've seen a Big Ten team in recent years, and I definitely like how they played the last couple weeks. And even though they're 2-5, they kind of they still have enough winnable games, and 3 of them are at home. I mean, they could maybe still get to 6-6. I think it would be pretty tough, though. But
wouldn't that be their third year in a row doing that?
It would be. Last year they started 0-3 or something like that, and then they streaked to a bowl game. I mean, they can do it. I mean, I still like the trajectory of this team. Brahm is putting together an army of skill position players. I mean, Rondell Moore is going to come back, you know, and he'll be a factor next year, if not later this season in November. But, you know, David Bell, freshman, has been lights out in Rondell Moore's absence. He's had at least 8 catches and 114 yards in 3 of the last 4 games. But he had already established himself as a quality second option when Moore was in the lineup. You know, and Milton Wright had a big touchdown bomb last week against Maryland. I mean, but the big question is, who is going to be the quarterback, though, during the back half of their careers? And so that's a big storyline. How is Plummer developed here in November? Is he going to be their guy next year? And if the season ends, even if they end 5-7 or 4-8 and Plummer's playing well, I really like this team's chances next year, but they just don't have the horses this year. You know, their 2 best players on defense haven't played all season, you know, in addition to Rondell Moore and Sindelar being hurt. It's just, they've just had a lot of bad luck on that front.
Ohio State 52, Northwestern 3. Moving on. Indiana 34.
Well, wait.
No, I'm not waiting. Maryland 28.
Refuse. Vetoed.
How about those Hoosiers, right?
Yeah, how about those Hoosiers?
5-2, and they have now 5 attempts to gain bowl eligibility, and they've got at Nebraska, home against Northwestern, at Penn State, Michigan, and then at Purdue. I think there's maybe a couple wins in there.
9 win in.
I mean, I like their chances going into Lincoln, and I like their chances against Northwestern.
And they did this too, mostly sure, without Penix, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Penix went out again. Now, it's not related to the shoulder injury that took him out for 2 games earlier in this year. I don't really know what happened here. He got tackled on a scramble. He didn't really appear hurt. He continued through that whole series, which included a commercial break as they went from the second to third quarter. And then he just didn't, you know, after that possession, though, he didn't come back. So,
so Maryland loses this game with Piggy going 17 of 27, 210 yards at 7 yards in attempt. Their main running back runs for 6.9 yards a carry. They only put up 28 points. Like,
do they have a bunch of turnovers?
Two.
Piggy threw a pick, and that running back did lose a fumble.
But, like, so this is a 28-point game for Maryland, and then Michigan has a 28-point game for Penn State where they gain under 300 yards. It's just I hate the football. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I feel like we've gotten there already.
Yeah.
This is a weird game. There were 6 touchdowns in the first half, and in the second half, however, there were only 2 touchdowns and 8 punts. So somehow Maryland and Indiana, after a crazy, you know, which is the real team chaos first half, kind of came out and played a defensive second half, and I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. I was like, wait, where's the 52-48 craziness that nobody really did much in the second half? Indiana's defense has really improved this year. I kind of like what I see.
Well, at least one of your teams can say that.
Yeah. Yay! You can't see it, but I'm waving a tiny IU victory flag.
Great.
Right now.
That's good. Great. It's a visual podcast. All right, Jamie, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jamie.
Hey, no problem, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Dave Nasternak. I raised the bidding to 10 scholarships.